Broadcasting across the United States, Canada, and around the world, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Your host for the program is Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because life and truth matter. For more information, resources, or to donate to CRI, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. To start today's Bible Answer Man broadcast, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. You hold this month, Doubts About Darwin, A History of Intelligent Design by Thomas Woodward. Available for your support. You can check it out on the web at equip.org or simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And do remember, a wonderful resource consultant standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. I've said this before, but the tragic consequences of evolution can hardly be overstated. Dr. Michael Denton has correctly pointed out that it is one of the most spectacular examples in history of how a highly speculative idea for which there is no really hard scientific evidence can come to fashion the thinking of a whole society and then dominate the outlook of an age. You think about the fact that reason, sans revelation, has led scientists to postulate that blacks are inferior to whites, that women are inferior to men, but never reason informed by revelation. The reason is that Scripture reveals that we are created in the Imago Dei, and that makes all the difference in the world. The image of God ensures that a Down syndrome child is afforded the same dignity given to a distinguished scientist. But the Imago Darwini leads in quite the opposite direction. For neo-Darwinians like Richard Dawkins, the Imago Dei is little more than a troublesome myth. And therefore, in his view, a human being has no more intrinsic value than a banana. And nor is humanity considered to be the crowning jewel of God's creation. The reason is, in time, a far more sophisticated life form will supplant humankind, courtesy of the evolutionary paradigm. So just as hippos transition into whales, humans will inevitably transition into, well, whatever. The fact that there's scant fossil evidence for this fundamentalist fervor seems of little consequence to the neo-Darwinianist. And nor is molecular evidence to the contrary a stumbling block. His mind being darkened, Richard Dawkins and many like him blindly swallow an ocean. Skin becomes impermeable to water and eye protection mechanisms appear like magic, and there are changes in the brain and diving and emerging mechanisms. They appear like magic, a respiratory system that prevents the bends, lactation, sonar, and I could go on. Dawkins, enamored by reason sans revelation, long ago departed the world of science and has waded into an illusory land of science fiction. That's why I am so passionate about Doubts About Darwin. It's a history of an intelligent design movement that is willing to follow truth wherever it leads. This is not just a book on the issue of origins. I think this is a must-reading book of critical importance in the age in which we live. Your copy, available for your support. Check it out on the web at equip.org. The author of Doubts About Darwin, Thomas Woodward, joins me. As always, great to have you on the broadcast.
It's a real privilege for me. Thank you so much for the opportunity to discuss one of my favorite topics.
And, you know, when you talk about intelligent design, this theory is not simply a God of the gaps form of argument. I mean, this is a very substantive argument.
That is I would say 100% correct, because, you know, the whole idea, the God of the gaps phrase, the idea that, well, if we don't understand something now, we'll just put, you know, we'll put a little sticker there, God did that. And then when they fill in the gap of knowledge, they figure out the mechanism that's involved in, you know, causing comets or allowing meteorites to fall out of heaven. Oh, then that's no longer God's, no longer involved. Well, the whole idea of intelligent design, it is focusing on the hills, the peaks of evidence. It's focusing on the anomalies where we have tons of evidence and the prevailing theory can't handle it, can't explain it, can't render it credible in terms of the old theory. The other thing is that, to be quite simple, intelligent design is minimalist, and I think that's a good thing. Minimalist means it doesn't try to do too many things at one time. It focuses on identifying the fact, the smoking gun, I think, phrase that we've used before, of intelligence being involved, and then it shows that, wow, you need to now look and find out who that intelligence is. And religious explanations, biblical, I would say, explanations, are brought to the fore, and then we can deal with those in the next, the subsequent discussion. But to say that this is just, just temporary, no. We're actually basing on hills of information. We're inferring intelligent causation. And quite frankly, the neo-Darwinian theory, it often will use Darwin as the gap explainer. And I could go into that if we wanted to, but I think that's a very very precisely accurate point you're making, Hank.
One of the things that you have pointed out is Mike Behe's theory, his mouse trap. This is something people maybe are vaguely familiar with. At one time, many, many people were familiar with it, but then there was this disinformation campaign said that Michael Behe had been utterly discredited. His mousetrap really didn't prove his point at all. Talk about the mousetrap theory and how this is the beating heart of the intelligent design paradigm.
Well, Michael Behe, again, molecular biologist who had already become a skeptic of neo-Darwinism as a full professor at Lehigh, tenured, thankfully, and he read Michael Denton's book, Evolution of Theory and Crisis, finished it in one night, and it revolutionized his own thinking in this area. He had told us, as a good, loyal Roman Catholic, just accept Darwinism and just God worked through Darwinian theory, whatever. And so now he became a skeptic. Well, what do you do? Well, he began thinking about it in his own area of molecular machines. These are little twisted proteins that work together, just like a mousetrap. So a mousetrap has five parts. It has the base. It has the business end, that big U-shaped hammer. They call it the hammer usually. And it's held back, of course, by a holding bar, but it's also given the power by the spring and also has the little trip, the catch, the trigger mechanism. And you need all five of those parts, otherwise you won't catch a single mouse. You can't use the platform, hope the mouse will hit its trip in the dark, hit its head and die. That won't work too well. You can't add, let's say, the holding bar and hope that it will impale itself as it falls through the air. No, you need all five parts to efficiently catch even one mouse. Many machines in our body are just like the mouse trap. They have a minimal, you can't go below that number kind of complexity, and he calls it irreducible. So, by the way, Hank, I can say that in Russian, having lectured about a dozen times in Ukraine. Would you like to hear it in Russian?
I love it.
Yeah. Нередуцируя моя сложность. We'll get back to English right away here. But the whole idea of irreducible complexity is just astoundingly powerful. It's really something that was hinted at in both Philip Johnson's book, Darwin on Trial, and by Michael Denton, but it took Michael Behe to pull the elements together. Well, 20 years later, we're right now coming up August, first week of August, we'll be celebrating the 20th anniversary of Behe's book that came out 10 years ago in a 10th anniversary edition. He said, the only thing I need to really add is two more names on the list of my children. I think it was up to 9 children. And Behe's book has withstood the most incredible onslaught of criticism and attempted falsification, and it stands taller and more credible than ever just because of that. And I would say that the fact that not a single one of those systems that he described in this book, Darwin's Black Box, has yielded to even the slightest experimental verification, that it was built by a blind process. That shouts design at the level of Mount Everest, really to the level of the moon.
You sort of alluded to this, but what about the Roman Catholic capitulation on this issue? It's as though they'd just fallen over and accepted a macroevolution as being consistent with the biblical paradigm. And so let's accept it because it's proven. Why, and I don't want to pick on Roman Catholicism, but why you have these major bodies within the historic Christian church that simply have rolled over on this issue?
Well, and just to, if I could come to their kind of eclectic condition, maybe a little bit of eclectic defense. You're right, I think, in general. Hank, at the highest level, the Holy See, the current Pope, and even John Paul II was a bit waffling on this whole issue. Benedict was a bit better, but not much. But the Catholic Church really has been in a kind of a, you can believe up to this, but not beyond this line. And the line that they will not allow a Catholic teacher, at least ostensibly, to go beyond is to say that the soul was evolved. So you can have the full, you know, the human persona as far as the body, but if you say that the soul, the spirit evolved, then that's where they throw the penalty flag. So to me, it's one of those tragic facts, but I keep finding more and more of my brothers who are vibrant followers of Christ, trust Christ as their Lord and Savior, and they're attending Roman Catholic churches, and many, many, many of these dear brothers and sisters have embraced design. Like Michael Behe is a leader, world leader, even though, you know, his Roman Catholic Church doesn't necessarily promote his work, but they certainly, many of them stand by it.
You've written about epigenetics. Doesn't that increase the heartache beyond the 10 scale? What are we seeing here, and why is it shocking all of us?
Well, I think that the epigenetic explosion, and it was scored a big hit in the Time magazine cover story. Oh, it's been cover stories of almost any major magazine you want to name in the area of science, even medicine now is all over. There's huge grants. I mean, we're talking multi-billion grants are going to map this higher control system, the operating system. The DNA is like the hard drive in, and that's the epigenetics. And it's causing, right in the last couple of weeks, a huge furor because they're saying, well, there's more to this than you think. Other people saying, no, there's much less than this than you think. And so it's turbulent. It's kind of firm and ferment is boiling. But epigenetics is basically the discovery above DNA of several additional layers of programming that extend not just in the surrounding environment, like the tags that are added to DNA, the tags and flags and chemical signals that are clustered around the DNA spooling system, but you go out beyond the nucleus and you find embedded information in the microstructures, even in the cell membrane, has very sophisticated memory systems embedded there. It's like being told that your computer, every nook and cranny, including the outer shell, has embedded information and not just the hard drive. That would be a shocker. Well, that's exactly what we're finding about the cell. And it's just, again, much, much harder to even begin to explain those areas. Darwinian theory falls silent on those topics.
We're talking to Thomas Woodward. He is the author of the book, Doubts About Darwin. It's a history of the intelligent design movement. It is an absolute must-read, fascinating. Steve Fuller, University of Warwick, England, says, Doubts About Darwin provides the first comprehensive treatment of the rise of intelligent design theory, perhaps the most challenging intellectual movement to come out of the U.S. in the last decade. Pretty strong words. And Murray Eden, Professor Emeritus, MIT, says, a delightful chronicle of the ways a small group of doubters are reshaping the debate and bringing out the inadequacies of natural selection to the general public. In other words, this is accessible stuff. Doubters and believers alike ought to read Doubts About Darwin. It has so much to teach them. And I can tell you, I have learned from this book, and so will you. It's the kind of book that you want to pass along to your friends, family members, teachers, pastors, and it is available for your support of the ministry. Check it out on the web at equip.org. You can also write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. In our resource consultant standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. While you're on the web, you can check out all kinds of wonderful resources in the area of origins. We have, for example, some of the great DVDs by Illustra Media. I think of Metamorphosis. What an incredible example of intelligent design. Or Privileged Planet. So many resources available for your library, and they're all available for your support of the ministry. Again, check it out on the web at equip.org. When we come back from the break, we'll be taking some of your calls. As always, the number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. Talking to Thomas Woodward during the entirety of this broadcast, the book Doubts About Darwin, A History of Intelligent Design. It's republished by the Christian Research Institute and available for those who stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth.
According to Richard Dawkins, Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. Yet deep in the halls of scientific academia, a debate has been quietly raging between Darwinian macroevolution and the theory of intelligent design. Find out why in Doubts About Darwin, A History of the Intelligent Design Movement by Thomas Woodward. Receive your copy as our thanks for your gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The willingness of our Lord's original disciples to suffer and die for their faith is one of the most commonly cited lines of argument for the resurrection. But how do we really know that they were killed for their testimony about Jesus Christ? Other topics include digital souls, what should Christians believe about artificial intelligence, how to read historical narrative, developing an agile apologetic, human flourishing and the myth of religious neutrality, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. In China, we can criticize Darwin, but not the government. In America, you can criticize the government, but not Darwin. That's the sobering quip from paleontologist Junyuan Chen, contrasting the academic freedoms of China and the United States. It shows how the atheistic religion of philosophical naturalism, with its Darwinian evolutionary origins myth, has an iron grip on countless professors and educators in the U.S. Receive Doubts About Darwin, A History of the Intelligent Design Movement by Thomas Woodward, or the Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff when you support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. Add one or both of these resources to your apologetics arsenal and be ready to offer well-reasoned answers on the single most important apologetics issue of our time. Simply call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. best-known evolutionist in the world, Richard Dawkins, claims those who do not believe in evolution are ignorant, stupid, or insane. But as Thomas Woodward shows in his book, Doubts About Darwin, A History of the Intelligent Design Movement, rather than brandishing emotional stereotypes, intelligent design proponents wield reason and empirical science, and unlike many evolutionary theorists, actually follow the scientific evidence wherever it leads. Receive the book, Doubts About Darwin, A History of the Intelligent Design Movement, as our thanks for your gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. We now return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Here's Hank Hanegraaff.
A quick reminder, the complete Bible Answer book, collector's edition, revised and updated, available to those who join the monthly CRI support team in a personalized fashion. I'm pleased to personalize one to you, a family member, or a friend. This is the revised, updated version. There are now over 500,000 copies in print, and it is available again in a personalized format to you, a family member, or a friend. When you join CRI's monthly support team, you can check that out on the web at equip.org, or again, just write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Resource consultant standing by, 888-7000, and the letter CRI. We're talking today about Doubts About Darwin, the book by Thomas Woodward. And Thomas Woodward has joined me on the broadcast for the entirety of the broadcast, and we're taking some of your calls. We'll go right to the phone lines, your calls for Thomas Woodward. First up, John in Raleigh, North Carolina, listening on WDRU. Hi, John.
Hi, Hank. Great show today. When I was in seminary, I was taught by Dr. Gleason Archer, an Old Testament and Hebrew scholar, who had introduced us to the old earth creation idea and interpretation of Genesis. It's very hermeneutically sound and very detailed, that has an explanation for the age of the earth, you know, being more than 6,000 years old. And what's a little irritating is that sometimes there's a faction of evangelicalism that calls us that might believe in that evolutionists, and it's totally untrue. We have nothing, no part and parcel with evolution. But at the same time, we also believe that the interpretation of the word day there in Genesis is more than a 24-hour day. And I was just wondering what your guest thought about that.
Oh, here we go. I guess if it's okay to be candid about my own position, I'm sure that's within the parameters of our discussion here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have, ever since I came to Christ at the end of my freshman year, I was an atheist and then for about 3 months an agnostic and then turned to Christ at the end of my freshman year at Princeton University. And I, John Whitcomb, one of the famous young earth creationists, had actually come to faith through that same Princeton ministry back in the late 40s. So he was lecturing on evolution. I would say I 100% agree with what he was saying. He was making a case for a young earth and a young universe. I never, in my either thinking then or when I did a THM at Dallas Seminary or afterwards, of course, Gleason Archer is one of my heroes, one of the great evangelical scholars of this past generation. So I've never thought, really, that the case for a young universe could be credibly made, either from the Bible, and I'm talking about a straightforward, let's say, literal reading of the first chapter. I don't think that you can try to make a case, but it's not a strong case for a young universe. I think that I think on the other hand that you can make a case for a relatively younger Earth, which pre-existed as raw materials and was set up in 6 days. But I think the stars were already created. The Hebrew of the description of day four is very interesting, and it doesn't seem that the stars are being described as created that day. They're named co-rulers that day. So my view is eclectic, and if I can just say that one of my students say, Prof, you're not older, you're not younger, you're Middle Earth. So this is maybe the Tolkien view. And so, it's an eclectic view. The whole Old Testament, a whole bunch of Old Testament scholars I know that are very, very strong in the Hebrew, hold to both days of normal length and the older, potentially older universe. Now, I know that this issue, what I tell my students is, I want you to know the strongest arguments, and there are some strong arguments for an older Earth perspective. Most of the intelligent design scholars would hold, let's say, 85, 90% perhaps of the ID movement, reject neo-Darwinism, but they take the older Earth perspective. Steve Meyer would be an example. And we all have such a wonderful time of discussing, and not with heated tones, but welcoming one another. And so I want my students to know the strongest cases and arguments on all sides of these kinds of issues. I think that's the purpose of education. So, Hank, I hope that's okay that I shared a bit of that.
I love it. And you know what I appreciate about John's question is that John is pointing out that, unfortunately, there are people that are making this an acid test for orthodoxy.
Right.
And I think that's where the big mistake comes. And to the point that you were making, I mean, look, you call yourself old Earth, but you're really not all that old Earth. If you say that the Earth is 4.5 billion years, that's not that old when you think we have a debt approaching $19 trillion. Now, that's a big number.
brilliantly put. Thank you, Hank.
We'll go back to the phone lines, and we'll talk next to Lance. He's listening in Memphis, Tennessee on WCRV. Hi, Lance.
Hey, can you hear me?
Absolutely. You're on with Thomas Woodward.
I was listening to a late-night radio show, Coast to Coast AM, and there was a scholar on there who was saying that there were some ancient Sumerian texts written before the Bible, which kind of hinted at the fact that man was genetically engineered by alien space gods. So I wonder what your view is on that.
Well, there's always a good time for science fiction to come on to the stage in our culture. I mean, there are many people that out there, you know, Scientology, one of the top places where it's taught and disseminated, is right here where I'm located right now in Clearwater, Florida. And their view is really somewhat, you know, at least convergent with that. A guy named Sitchin, I believe it's, I forget his first name, but wrote a number of books, and he has almost a quasi-cult. The Urantia cult is another cult that a lady tried to evangelize me when I was speaking at Texas Tech University about 20 years ago. She worked on me for a half an hour to an hour just trying to get me to open up to the Book of Urantia. And all of these systems, whether they be science, you know, with all the trappings of, well, you know, we have evidence, or there'd be more like really weird and bizarre, more verging on cult with some science sheen, they avoid the obvious problem that you cannot, you know, account for complexity within the universe unless there is a creator God who exists both imminent in contact with the universe, but above and beyond the universe. And I would say that's where Scripture is so powerful and so, again, convergent with science. The data of DNA, the data of the fine-tuning of the universe, point to a creator who created both the tapestry as well as the letters and the brushstrokes on the tapestry. And that's both levels. And I think that the seductive idea, well, you know, aliens made us, was even seen in the movie Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, where Richard Dawkins practically broke down there at the end in his conversation at the end of the movie, and just said, you know, well, maybe intelligent design does have something, but it has to be an alien. I'm thinking, well, this is an interesting twist. And I think it just shows you again that we recognize design when we see it. Designer is implied when you see true design. And I think that's true in at the macro level of the universe, and it points to a being beyond the universe. Great question. Thank you.
And sort of in line with this, Tom, theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking, he's infamous for supposing that the existence of a vast number of universes or a multiverse explains the fine-tuning of the universe. In other words, he asserts that given a sufficient number of random universes, one of them is bound to have the necessary conditions to support not only intelligent life, but also the proposition that blind chance can account for time, for this kind of fine-tuning. In reality, this seems to be an utterly desperate attempt to account for an unfathomably fine-tuned universe.
Well, yes, to say that we're the lucky winner of the lottery of some universe-generating system or machine that's pumping out, you know, a couple hundred million per second of new universes, and they're bobbing around like bubbles in the air up in some hyperspace. That makes for great science fiction. But there's just one massive, you know, overwhelming problem. There's no evidence for the existence of other universes, and if they did exist, it still would not explain the origination of the macro manifold in which those universes are generated or exist continuously parallel to one another. I'll never forget the time that William Lane Craig, the great apologetics genius, was on our campus, and someone asked him about the multiverse. And he pointed out very simply, he said, the problem with the multiverse, there are many, many of them, but the universe generator itself has to be fine-tuned. So you cannot escape fine-tuning wherever you look.
And we should note, as you just said, that there's not a shred of evidence to support the existence of a physical universe other than our own, much less a virtually infinite number of this kind of universes. So his hope and the hope of multitudes who share this kind of fanciful presupposition is based on theological and theoretical pining, not on scientific discovery. The book we're talking about, Doubts About Darwin, it's a history of intelligent design by Thomas Woodward. It is an absolute must read. It is available for your support as a rhetorician of science. And rhetorical historian of design, Thomas Woodward, insightfully analyzes step by step the critical processes of persuasion that have systematically eroded the misplaced confidence in Darwinian dogma. And it is a dogma. It's a dogma that you believe as long as you have a particular set of glasses on. As soon as you take off those glasses, the paradigm shifts dramatically, and you can start following truth wherever it leads you. Doubts About Darwin, a brilliant book available for your support. Again, check it out on the web at equip.org or simply write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And our resources consultants are standing by, 888-7000 and the letter CRI as well. By the way, when you go to the web, you can find all kinds of resources like the Christian Research Journal. It is our award-winning magazine, a magazine that no Christian home should be without. You can subscribe in a safe, secure fashion on the web. Again, equip.org, all kinds of resources are also available on this issue that we're talking about, the issue of origins. We have made it our business to find the best resources available on the subject. I've talked many times about Illustra Media, their DVDs. If you haven't seen one of them, Flight, Metamorphoses, Privileged Planet, there are a host of others. Check them out on the web at equip.org. I can tell you how important it has been for me as the father of 12 children to have these DVDs, to sit down and watch them with my kids. They are assaulted the moment they go to university, and they need to be prepared. These kinds of resources available to do just that, to prepare them, to always be ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within them, with gentleness and with respect. At the top of the list, Doubts About Darwin, check it out on the web at equip.org. We'll be right back with our final segment. Please stay tuned.
Hank Hanegraaff says, how you view your origins will ultimately determine how you live your life. If you believe you are a function of undirected, purposeless processes, you will live by a different standard than if you know you are created in the image of God. Origins is the key apologetics issue of our time. Receive the Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff as our thank you for your gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. Hank Hanegraaff will be back right after this.
Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Did you know that neo-Darwinian evolutionary theory is still, as it was in Darwin's time, a highly speculative hypothesis entirely without factual support? It is certainly not a self-evident axiom. However, philosophical naturalists have an iron grip on Western scientists who indoctrinate millions of students in universities and college campuses with this scientific religion. To equip you in this battle for truth, receive Doubts About Darwin, A History of Intelligent Design by Thomas Woodward, or The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff when you support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. Add one or both of these resources to your apologetics arsenal and be ready to offer well-reasoned answers on the single most important apologetics issue of our time. Simply call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. There are many different views of the good life, the kind of life that enables human beings to achieve their full potential. Should a secular state support only those views that are non-religious? Or might it be that all such views, when considered more deeply, are religious in nature? Other topics include, did the apostles really die as martyrs for their faith? Rape and sexual violence on campus? What should Christians believe about artificial intelligence? And much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. According to biologist Michael Denton, Charles Darwin's general theory is still, as it was in Darwin's time, a highly speculative hypothesis, entirely without direct factual support, and very far from that self-evident axiom some of its more aggressive advocates would have us believe. And increasing numbers of evolutionary biologists are now saying that our whole fundamental view of biology needs to change. Receive the book Doubts About Darwin, A History of the Intelligent Design Movement, as our thanks for your gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. Let's return to your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy. Talking about Doubts About Darwin, A History of Intelligent Design by Thomas Woodward. I wrote the foreword to the book. It is available for your support. Check it out on the web at equip.org or write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And as always, our resource consultants are standing by, 888-7000. And the letters CRI, taking some calls for Thomas Woodward. Next up, Phil. He's listening in Kansas City, Kansas, Bot Radio. Hi, Phil.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I first heard about Darwin in 1966 at a biology deal, and the guy, the teacher, Mr. Clark, says, well, I don't want to shake your faith or anything, you know, but we're going to go into this and start talking about Darwin. So I go home, you know, and I'm biting nails, this stuff, you know, and asked my dad about it. He was a chemist, and he said, well, he explained what a theory was. And then he said, this Darwin guy, he said 2 years after the Civil War, all the blacks will be back in slavery. He said, did that happen? I said, no, sir. He said, well, he also said women are inferior thinkers. He said, do you know any smart women? I go, well, yeah. He said, well, he's wrong on these two. What do you think about this last one? He might be wrong on that. Did you, in your research, did you come across anything like this?
Well, it is very, very clear, unmistakable, and very painful for the Darwin side that Darwin embraced, at least at some level, a racist view that would be probably shocking to anyone who would read the portions from his book, The Descent of Man. That was published separately a number of years after his Origin of Species came out. I just, my copy of the Descent of Man is up on my shelf. I'm actually one of my projects. I got this new edition, this revised edition, this a few months ago. And so I want to plow through that book and complete it. I'm committed to reading the original materials. But the excerpts that you can find anywhere on the web, just Google, you know, racist content and then Darwin's, Descent of Man. You'll find very, very readily that he actually referred to the day when and I don't want to even use his terminology, but the inferior races would be exterminated. And the gap between the, let's say, the apes and what he says, advanced mankind, will be much larger. I mean, it's almost a description or of a point of view that will make your hair curl. So that's kind of what do you call it, airbrushed. We never hear those quotes from Darwin. We just hear what a brilliant gentleman he was, and of course he did give some money. It was kind of his views were an interesting combination. He gave some money for the abolitionist movement, but he certainly, in his views of these issues, held a very racist perspective and sexist as well, as from what I know. Hank, maybe you know more on that topic.
Well, this is something that I have become very, very familiar with, and you're absolutely right. I've often said that evolution not only dispenses with God, but attempts to make humans the center of the universe. And evolutionist is just as has been discussed, it's racist. You think of what Charles Darwin said in 1881, and I memorized this a long time ago. He said, the more civilized so-called Caucasian races have beaten the Turkish hollow in the struggle for existence. And then he said, looking at the world at no very distant date, an endless number of lower races will have been eliminated by higher civilized races throughout the world. And then you think about what his bulldog, Thomas Huxley, who coined the term agnostic, said. He said that no rational man, cognizant of the facts, believes that the average Negro is the equal, still less the superior, of the white man.
Wow.
And he went on to say it is simply incredible to think that he will be able to compete successfully with his bigger-brained, smaller-jawed rival in a contest that is carried on by thoughts and not by bites. And then as far as this sexist idea is concerned, yeah, Darwin actually tried to attempt to persuade his devotees that the chief distinction in the intellectual powers of the two sexes is shown by man attaining to a higher eminence. And he said this, in whatever he takes up, a man can show greater prowess, greater ability in anything than can a woman. And then he went on to say whether it's requiring deep thought, reason, imagination, the use of senses, the average of mental power in man has to be that above the average of mental power of a woman. So he was very, very explicit about this. And there's one other thing I want to say about this and have you comment, but this is really pandemic in the paradigm. You think about David Hume. He rendered blacks naturally inferior to whites. And this is what he wrote. Negroes never discovered any symptoms of ingenuity. While one of them might at first appear to be erudite. In the end, he is only like a parrot who speaks a few words plainly. In like fashion, you have Charles Darwin, obviously, as we've talked about, suggesting the preservation of favored races in the struggle for existence. So, I think this needs to be said. This is a racist, sexist paradigm. And it has to be, because for the genes, I mean, you have to have the fitter genes succeed and the ones that are not as fit fail in order for evolution to take place.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that same phenomenon is seen in the rise of the Nazi ideology. And quite frankly, it's seen in, I don't want to go into this in too much detail, even in some of the worldview perspectives. Some of my dear friends who are of the who came out of the Shinto perspective said that there was a kind of a superiority that is continually, it's not as strong today, but in that area of the world. I mean, you'll find there's a tendency toward favoring one race over another that is just almost built into our fallen nature as sinners. And Darwin almost captures, codifies it, and tries to scientificize it.
Let's talk about the ID movement again as we close out the broadcast today. Talk about its spread overseas, some of the breakthroughs and experimental support, and give us a glimpse of the future.
Well, if I had to make a prediction, and I did predict in one of my writings, I said by the year 2025, and I guess we're only 9 years away from that, I said that neo-Darwinism will have decisively fallen back in the pack. If you think of a Kentucky Derby race or some kind of race for the gold medal in the marathon or the mile, what do they call it, kilometer run, but, you know, 2 kilometer, whatever. The whole idea of neo-Darwinism maintaining its position, I don't think there's a single person outside of Richard Dawkins and a few diehards that would put their money now on neo-Darwinism. It is falling to the ground fast. And what they're trying to do is patch together a replacement, a kind of a hodgepodge of self-constructing mechanisms and self-organization ideas and a little bit of dash of epigenetics. You know, good luck. I mean, that's why I said in my book, and another one of my writings, I said, you know, I think that this new paradigm that's going to replace neo-Darwinism on the naturalistic side will be in the competition with intelligent design. Neo-Darwinism is going to fall back to the last place as a sole explanatory factor. But what you have today is not just the problem of neo-Darwinism, but the design paradigm continues to pop. In Brazil, several of the leading Brazilian National Academy of Scientists have come forward publicly in favor of intelligent design, and more than that, have actually spoken out at a major national conference in Norway and Denmark. I'm heading there this weekend, where there are the scientists coming forward in Finland, in Russia, in the oddest places, even in Germany, in some places, in Spain. We're seeing geneticists who are actually kind of gingerly, sometimes boldly, but they're coming out and espousing a new explanatory paradigm called intelligent design. I think that the reason that they're bold is because we find in the lab now overwhelming evidence that neo-Darwinism can't even tweak the smallest feature of a single protein. And the smoking gun there is Doug Axe and his work at the Biologic Institute. I take my hat off to the Biologic Institute, a group of scientists who've been doing bench, hardcore biochemistry science, and they play with bugs, they dissect them, they demand that the bugs try to evolve, and the bugs say, I can't, I'm sorry, I give up, and then they're gone. And so I think that if you read the work of the of Doug Axe and Gager and the whole crew there, Richard Sternberg is working on a master bombshell book. I can't even talk much about it because it's kind of like in the works, but there's so many things happening. It's a great day to be one who follows and acts on the fact of design.
Thomas Woodward, we are deeply appreciative to you, not only for the book, but for your work in general and for your fidelity to the faith. And you've obviously taught us not only how to think, but how to communicate, and appreciate your contributions to the broadcast. And certainly this book is fantastic.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be a part of the republication. By the way, your graphics people are brilliant. The cover, I love. My wife says, that's cool. No longer having to stare at Darwin's face in a green background.
Thomas Woodward, he is, again, a professor at Trinity College. He teaches the history of science, communication, and systematic theology, and he is the founder and director of the C.S. Lewis Society and lectures in universities on scientific, apologetic, and religious topics. If you've never heard him speak, you want to do that. And if you've never read Thomas Woodward, Start with Doubts About Darwin, it is available for your support. Check it out on the web at equip.org. Again, you can always write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Our resource consultant standing by, 888-7000, and the letter CRI. Never forget that we have the inestimable privilege to share the good news that nothing could be more compelling in an age of scientific enlightenment than the words we read in Scripture. The Lord, by wisdom, founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps were broken up, and the skies drip with dew. Again, nothing could be more compelling or correct in an age of scientific enlightenment. We've been talking about the issue of origins. It is not just a apologetic issue. It is the apologetic issue. How one views their origins ultimately will determine how they live their lives. The resource, Doubts About Darwin, available for those who support the ministry all this month, also for those who join the monthly CRI support team. We'd be pleased to send you a copy of the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, personalized to you, a family member or a friend. We're deeply grateful for those who stand with this ministry shoulder to shoulder in the battle for life and truth. Look forward to seeing you next time with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
You've been listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. To listen to the broadcast on the internet, visit equip.org, where you'll also find a wealth of information and resources to equip you. To talk to a resource consultant, call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. In China, we can criticize Darwin, but not the government. In America, you can criticize the government, but not Darwin. That's the sobering quip from paleontologist Junyuan Chen, contrasting the academic freedoms of China and the United States. It shows how the atheistic religion of philosophical naturalism, with its Darwinian evolutionary origins myth, has an iron grip on countless professors and educators in the U.S. Receive Doubts About Darwin, A History of the Intelligent Design Movement by Thomas Woodward, or the Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff when you support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. Add one or both of these resources to your apologetics arsenal and be ready to offer well-reasoned answers on the single most important apologetics issue of our time. Simply call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD.
Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.